also take the opportunity because I believe that it is very much important for me to say well done, members, on yesterday's debate. At least it was really, really a long journey, but ekugqibeleni siwelile. I really, really feel proud about the members of this portfolio committee. All of you, you have done your mark. And I believe that even the other members of parliament were very much excited about your legislation that you have produced. So, well done. To the department, you have done a lot for us. Yes, we were fighting. Boxing, yeah. But that is the outcome of boxing. So, bruises. So, thank you very much. The lawyers. I think the state law advisor too, because they were giving us tough times, those people, but at least at the end of the day, so that was a figure like to me. Thank you so much. I'll request the department to, or the we've got three items on the agenda, and I received a request from the department that item number one, they are not able to present it for one reason. It has to be rephrased because in terms of the Auditor General's report, they've dealt with it, but this part of the consultants, they are still discussing it with the Auditor General. How are they going to, how is it going to be addressed? Because seemingly there's no comment from the Auditor General on this one. But they are committing themselves to come before the Portfolio Committee and report on the matter of how they have used the consultants, all the details. So I would request that the Portfolio Committee give them an opportunity to come next week just to brief us, because for us it is very much important that we understand, because in the past 2 years there were reports and expenditure on the consultants, so they owe us that report. That is the issue. Then the issue, the second item, I think they are ready on this one, and then the third one, which is the Housing Development Agency regulations, of which I believe we are finalizing them today. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I believe that we... Honorable Foreman?
Thank you, Chairperson. I am quite happy with that, excepting to say if the department is saying that they're coming back next week, they won't come back next week with another reason to extend this. I think because our time is running out, we only have about 2 weeks left now. Thanks.
Thank you. Abango Mahlosi, zivumeli ngemilomo yenu. I was saying they are not the ancestors. They must talk for themselves. I'm not going to speak for themselves. So they are agreeing. Yeah, they are giving that assurance. Okay, let me give the opportunity to the department on the second item, closure of Tubelisha and the National Housing Fund.
Thank you, Chair. My colleague, Ms. Funaneng Mahlatsi, is going to lead us on this particular item. I thought, Chair, it's also proper to make this announcement. I think the DG has talked to you about it as well, that this will be Ms. Mahlatsi's last presentation as a CFO of this organization. She will still be in the sector, and she will still be assisting us to achieve the targets that you have set for ourselves, but today will be her last presentation as the CFO of the Department of Human Settlements. Losing her in the sector, she will still be acting as a finance director within the same environment, but I will not tell where she's going. I think she'll be able to speak for herself there. But without wasting time, I'm going to ask Ms. Masazi to lead us on the presentation.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and honorable members, good morning. Chair, the first presentation I know Chairperson said it's to Edisha, but on the screen it's the National Housing Fund. I'm not sure if maybe the Chairperson will allow us to start with the National Housing Fund, seeing that it's on the screen already. And then I will talk to the committee on my departure after the rest of the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think it's fair that the department takes responsibility, because for what I'm going to say today, they will live with the consequences. And that is the fair case. Chair, Mr. Mbengwa will do the presentation on the National Housing Fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The National Housing Fund, Chair, was created in 1966. And subsidized housing projects were funded from this fund. At that time, both provinces and municipalities applied for funding for all their housing projects, and these funds were granted to them as loans. When the Housing Arrangements Act was promulgated in 1993, Section 12B also provided for the establishment of the National Housing Fund. The current Housing Act, Section 11, Subsection 1 of the Housing Act of 1997, also provides for the continued existence of the South African Housing Fund. And in line with the provisions of this Act, funds were allocated for housing development, and they were transferred from the national vote to the South African Housing Fund. Funds were not utilized. Funds which were not utilized during the financial year remained in the fund and did not revert back to the fiscals. The introduction of the Division of Revenue Act meant that funds are to be transferred from the national vote to the provincial vote via the provincial treasury, as we know today. This rendered the National Housing Fund dormant. As a result, in August 2003, MINMEC approved the disestablishment of the South African Housing Fund. On the 18th of November 2003, the South African Housing Fund was delisted from Schedule 3A of the PFMA, which meant that there was no longer any need for the fund to comply with various prescripts like producing a strategic plan and producing an annual plan, as well as and other reports which are required in terms of the PFMA. The closure of or the disestablishment of the South African Housing Fund can only be effected via the amendment of the Housing Act. Subsequent to the delisting, endeavors were made to amend the Housing Act in order to effect the disestablishment of the South African Housing Fund. These endeavors resulted into the Housing Amendment Bill. The Housing Amendment Bill was, however, withdrawn as a result of the change of mandate of the department. In terms of the way forward, Chair, the department decided to embark on a process of developing a green paper. At the moment, the department has finalized and has currently a draft of the medium-term strategic framework, and in terms of that MTSF document, it is anticipated that the current Housing Act will be amended in 2017, and in terms of moving forward, that green paper will end up will culminate into the Human Settlements Act. My inquiries, Chair, with the researchers indicated that they anticipate that by the end of the next financial year, there would be a draft of the green paper ready. And that will take us forward towards the finalization of the Human Settlements Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Members. Honourable Bonnie.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have a question regarding this fund now. It would seem that funds which were not utilized remained in the fund and did not refer back to the fiscus. What is the state of that fund? I think we need to know that, and you know, is it in an interest-bearing account until such time as it gets tied up? What are the the financial implications of this? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the last page, they talk about the appointment of consultants. Is the appointment of consultants, does it have to do with the development of the green paper, or what is the appointment of consultants? What does it entail?
I think this one is a misplaced.
Is it?
This page is misplaced.
Is it? Nothing to do with the green paper.
No.
That must have been the cut and paste then. Thank you, Chair.
I think it's a concern because my question is that how long does it take to produce the green paper? Because if you started when there was the proclamation of the name change, I think by now, process your green paper if you meant business. So in the start of 2017, 2017, amendment of the Housing Act, whereas the SNAMA challenges now. A current Housing Act. You mean I was to deliver gender by Housing Act. I was a yoga 2017. Or 2019, yeah, tell a term. Yellow administration. 2 terms. The administration could division an amendment. Year Act A1. And the funeral fund when the serious gang and nine. Plum 7 Amendment Act, who amend umthetho omnye oyi-1 for 3 administrative nazika terms. Ayikho nto wrong.
Add petrol to the fire.
Because last year, when we had the strategic workshop together with the department and the provinces and the municipalities, we were given a time frame of the green paper. And it should have been submitted somewhere in the last quarter of last year. And now the time has changed to 2017. So I re-emphasize your point there, and I think it's unacceptable.
Hayi kanisho ndifuna nicho niibekele nithi thaxa sive sonke ifuneza lo msebenzi le call ya responding to the call leni ibizelweyo nohlube iact A1 kwi amend aniqale uqaleni you are amending kwezi ayiyo ke this time akusoyiyo no matter how say it what ngeke i-act i-amendwe inye for 2 or 3 administrators. Mbu? Ah. Kata sayo nubani ngabeke ipi excuse kule. We are not convinced.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to cite any excuses. This matter was deliberated on previously, and we acknowledge the fact that the portfolio committee was expecting the process of the green paper to be fast-tracked. I think what we need to do, Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, is to come before this portfolio committee and just give the full progress. I'm aware of the fact that we have engaged the CSIR, which is going to be assisting the department in the development of the green paper. The 2017 period that has been indicated in this process, in this presentation, has since changed. We are now looking at a period of 18 months, but I think it would be proper then for us to come and fully brief the portfolio committee to say within the period of 18 months, where are we now? And what is yet to take place going forward. But definitely it's not going to be 2017.
I don't know whether what she's saying it doesn't make sense to me if the department prepare a presentation and they present it here and nobody says anything about it, and then you ask a question, then the response is no. In fact, what you see written here is not supposed to be written here. What I'm saying is the truth. Now, must we believe her and not believe what is presented? Because I think it doesn't make sense, because it's like she is the custodian of what is right in the department, and what the department present here is incorrect. To what extent is the content of the presentation incorrect?
Injalo, respond.
At what extent?
In the MTSF document that we prepared for our targets in this coming term, we've got quite a number of deliverables there that we want to achieve. And this, the amendment of the Housing Act, is one of them. And I think the question that is being asked is whether the timelines that we are putting forward here are realistic or not. I think that's the question. Can we bring this forward? I think that's what you're asking. I don't want us to respond, our response to be a knee-jerk reaction to the question, because the Housing Act is, if I may put it this way, is the mother of all the pieces of legislation that we do. All these other policies emanate from that big act which was passed in 1997. And when you amend it, you don't want to do a piecemeal exercise. You amend it one clause this year, and then you come back another year you do another clause. There are quite a number of areas that have been listed to be amended in that act. For instance, the preemptive rights clause, we've talked about it, and I think your comment was very clear that even if we amend the preemptive rights clause, which is one of the clauses in the act, we shouldn't do it to satisfy the banks or to satisfy the private funders. So there's a lot of research work that needs to be done there. The clawback clause is there as well. So my view is we accept the recommendation that maybe we have to bring this a little bit forward and look at clear timelines as to how this can be done. In fact, you're saying that we should be completing this exercise by now. I'm not quite convinced that we will be able to do it within 1 year. Maybe we can talk about the timelines, but I don't think it would be proper for us to be able to answer a question specifically and say 2017 is not realistic, so we'll do it in 2015. Maybe what we should do is to come back to you and explain what is realistically possible within a shortened time frame, because you're telling us that 2017 is not acceptable. And maybe we need to go back to our drawing board and look at what is possible, rather than to say we won't do it or we will. My view is that let's accept the challenge and come up with a revised timeline.
I want to eat diplomas sometimes. But when it comes to the politicians, it does not work. The issue here, are you serious about the call? Because Mbu, when I figure Lendo said, Dallas, he can go. So, who defender in the defending him? Axis. Dallas, he raised a Lendo. And I think now, with the message you can say, passed on to you, you have really disappointed us because you have denied this portfolio committee the opportunity. Because we believe with the act, it would be a brainchild of this portfolio committee of the fourth parliament. You have denied us that. You have denied us the opportunity because this is me saying it. But nonetheless, we still maintain it. 2017 is not fair for the people of South Africa. Unless you are dealing, you are going to develop a legislation for the department. But if for the public, you have not done justice to the public of, to the citizens of South Africa. That is the bottom line. And we still need that briefing. We would like to have that briefing session. But how far have you gone? Because SASNAI briefing last year, honorable members, I think round about June, and there was much progress. Next week, say final briefing. Mano preparation needs a night. So that at least we look at the report here too, we must know how far have we gone. But you have disappointed us. That's the bottom line. Gege ni su segele. Libala ila usala li shili elu. Respondani kwi fund.
The funds which are not utilized, Chair, are invested by Treasury with reserve banks. They are Chair, I would not I don't know the exact amount at the moment, but it's about 25 million. We'll
thank you.
you, Chair. Just to follow up on that, since they're going to come back next week and report more clearly on the way forward, I would suggest that included in that report back is a detailed account of the funds as they were when it closed in 2003 and how the interest has accrued or what the status of that is today, a proper account of the funding.
Chair, may I just respond? The fund has been dormant, and the interest it's managed by Treasury. It doesn't come to us. So in our books, it just remains at the same amount. But all those funds, all funds are managed by Treasury. All that interest goes to the fiscal.
Go to the National Treasury, tell them, ask them to give you a detailed report on this one. You come and report to us about it. If there is a need for a National Treasury representative to come, they must also come. So you must come down. Can I go, please?
Chairperson, let me, while Mr. Ngomezulu is preparing himself to do the detailed presentation, just give a background as to the Tubelisha. And before even members could ask who learning strategy is, because it is part of the background that we have given. Chair, the functions of the closure of Tubelisha, at this point in time, while I am the interim CEO of Tubelisha, were undertaken by the Learning Strategy. Learning Strategy is a consultant that was appointed by the department upon the development of the closure of Tubelisha, such that the staffing, the matters of human resources were dealt with by the then Tubelisha at the time of it knowing that it would be liquidated or it will be closed by the department rather. And the matter of human resource and the matters of issues of land as Ngomezulu will be dealing with actually led to the department or the Tubelisha at that point in time not sitting with adequate staff to run the processes of the closure of Tubelisha. And I think at the time of me taking over the interim CEO ship, we were handling the Tubelisha closure with four officials at the level of a administration such that the people were only dealing with IT matters, and most of the staff at that point in time were transferred to the National Department of Human Settlements. And I think at that time we were only having one legal person who is currently employed with the National Department through the transfer process, because some of them opted for a package and some of them opted to stay within the department. They could not take their packages. And then we absorbed most of the Tubelisha officials into the department. So the legal person that we are currently sitting with in the department has assisted the process because of the fact that she had a background of the whole process. So she contributed to the number of officials that we're dealing with that were left with the Tubelisha as four of them, and as I indicated, they were administrators. The rationale for us to appoint the learning strategy at that, who bid it with the processes of the procurement processes of Tubelisha at that time, as handled through the correct channel. It was on the basis of the consultant running around the country to determine the complexity of the land issues that were around the country in as far as the Tubelisha is concerned. And the learning strategy chairperson ran with the process with our involvement, with the oversight responsibility of the department undertaken by Mr. Ngomezulu as he would present. So in most of the instances when learning strategy was performing the activities, the department officials led by Mr. Ngomezulu and myself were party to this. And I think chairperson, with the whole
issue of the Tubelisha thing, I think Mr. Ngomezulu will also touch on the issue of the metro builders, and I think it is an issue that is undertaken or it's under discussion between ourselves, and I think Mr. Changana will talk about it at some point or later during before we close with Eastern Cape. So, Chair, the difficulties that actually led us to not to close Tubelisha, he will also indicate in the process because of the fact that we did not have enough staff and that time. But the learning strategy chairperson actually assisted the department to date, and as a result, we requested them to provide a detailed report of which the presentation talks to them. And I think, chairperson, as Mr. Ngomezulu will indicate, the rationale and the rationale behind us going through the voluntary liquidation of the whole and the appointment of the liquidator to actually get the final closure of this. Chair, with that, let me, with your permission as well, allow Mr. Ngomezulu to do the detailed presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO, CFO. Chairperson, honorable members, this, I think, it's a summary of a detailed report of the voluntary liquidation of Tubelisha. The report outlines the terms of reference for learning strategy, the background, the voluntary closure in context, overview of progress to date, settlements with provinces, staff matters, legal matters, other matters, and financial positions and outstanding matters. Chairperson, before I could continue the report, I just want to distinguish between voluntary liquidation and liquidation which comes in terms of a court order, maybe where an institution or a company is declared bankrupt. Now, if a company is declared bankrupt and a court order is issued for that company to be liquidated, the master of the High Court normally appoints a liquidator who does, you know, all the processes of dealing with assets and dealing with liabilities of the entity before it can be declared, you know, at closed. Now, voluntary liquidation, it's a liquidation undertaken voluntarily without any court order, where a company, after disposing of its assets and liabilities, approaches also the Master of the Supreme Court in order for the Master to declare that company liquidated, and it is delisted, it is deregistered. So these are the two processes. Now, with Servcon and Tubelisha, those two companies had its own assets and liabilities. It was not in the state of bankruptcy. So the minister, through the closure report, approved the closure of those institutions because their mandate had expired in 2006. Let me proceed with the reported terms. This presentation sets out synopsis of closure process for Tubelisha Homes as contained in the closeout report dated 31st March 2012. The presentation has been prepared by our consultants, Learning Strategies. Why did we appoint Learning Strategies? It's because the executive management of Tubelisha resigned and left the company without, with no management. So we were forced to use a service provider. Ms. Mahlase has also indicated that the issue of disposing of assets and also dealing with liabilities needed some expertise, which was not available in the department, and as a result, we had to appoint learning strategists. Now, the National Department of Human Settlement set about establishing the Housing Development Agency in 2008 in order to acquire, develop, release suitable land for the housing development. Some of these functions were previously performed by Tubelisha and Sefcon. A decision was taken by NDOH to close these entities, and the service providers were appointed to facilitate the closure. Learning Strategies was appointed to assist with Tubelisha home closure process as a voluntary liquidation of the company. The closure process has extended over a number of years due to practical and legal constraints, including delays and difficulties in reaching settlements with provincial departments, the creditors, redeployment of staff of the company, and the alienation of the land registered in the name of the company, and numerous other constraints in decision delays. Chairperson, you remember that Tubelisha was an implementing agent of a number of projects which belonged to provinces. So certain funds were deposited with Tubelisha for those projects. Now, during this closure process, all those projects had to be reconciled and funds transferred back to provinces where these funds were not utilized, including the interest in terms of treasury regulations. The company was placed in voluntary liquidation on the 21st of March 2012. This report represents an overview of the closure process. Now, any company may be closed voluntarily by its shareholders or directors or in terms of its memorandum of incorporation. This assumes that the company will settle all its liability in this process. If there is a shortfall between assets and liabilities, then the company will face forced liquidations unless alternative funding is available. I've explained that already. Closure of Tubelisha is voluntarily winding up of the company, which assumes either the company can settle all its liabilities or that the government will fund any shortfall. Voluntary closure can be accomplished by ceasing to trade, operate, disposal of assets, settling liabilities, and terminating all commitments, including obligations to the staff. The company must be free of all assets and liabilities and cannot be finally liquidated until all assets and liabilities are disposed of. As a non-profit company, any surplus remaining after the closure of Tubelisha will need to be applied in terms of the company's memorandum of incorporation, normally for similar purposes as that of a company before closure. In 2008, the decision to close Tubelisha was given. In March 2009, a closure plan was approved by the minister. In July 2009, operations of Tubelisha discontinued, and voluntary severance packages was offered to the staff. Certain staff members accepted the voluntary severance packages, but certain staff members opted to be redeployed to the department. In August 2009 to March 2010, Tubelisha closure team was put in place. March 2010, the CEO resigned and the closure team terminated. March to June 2010, redeployment of remaining staff to the department and also to provincial departments. 2010, all contracts were terminated and all movable assets transferred. In 2010 to 2011, there was reconciliation and settlements with all provincial departments. And then in 2010 to 2011, legal matters were defended and settlements were done with creditors. Now, why were legal matters defended? Of course, certain contractors taking advantage of the closure of Tubelisha came up with claims which were non-existing, and some matters have to be taken to court. And there were certain cases where contractors committed fraud, and cases, criminal cases were open, case numbers were given to provincial departments in order to pursue the matter. 29 March 2012, Tubelisha was placed in a voluntary liquidation, and in July 2012, liquidator was appointed, and 2012 to 2013, remaining contractor dealing with land transfers. In other words, we had a difficulty in disposing of land assets which belong to Tubelisha. In fact, it's not actually disposing, but it's registering of properties to their rightful owners, because of municipalities' clearance certificate, there was delays, and we are still dealing with that even up to now. All projects were terminated by the 31st of March in 2010. Detailed reconciliations were negotiated with provinces. Settlements were agreed with contractors where liabilities could be proven. All funds remaining with Tubelisha were returned to provinces, provincial departments, as part of the final settlement. There was no further ongoing responsibilities between Tubelisha and provincial departments. Voluntary severance package were paid in July. Some staff redeployed. I think this is just a repetition. Balance of staff were eventually redeployed to provinces. I think this has been said already. Let's look at legal matters. Various legal matters have been dealt with during the closure process. All have settled or successfully defended as required. Key matters include Varane construction. This liability was agreed and settled. Steamer developers claimed by KZN contractor for loss of profits. This was defended and claimant could not prove the claim. So Bambiswana in Western Cape, claim and counterclaim agreed and settlements achieved with the assistance of the Western Cape Provincial Department. Ibuile, it's a consortium in Western Cape. Claim and counterclaim agreed and settlements achieved with assistance of Western Cape Provincial Department. Dikale, liability agreed and settled. There comes Chetty. Chetty 600 emerging contractors. The settlement agreed by negotiation, and the contractors signed certain letters of settlement, and settlements were paid with legitimate contractors who were contracted to Tubelisha. Western Cape Provincial Government, no formal claim submitted. Metro Builders, claim intimated by Metro, but never submitted to Tubelisha. Tubelisha has never had any contractual relationship with Metro Builders. Apparently, Metro Builders subcontracted to, I'm not sure whether it's Varane construction, but it's subcontracted. So the contract between Metro Builders was between the principal contractor and itself. Land transfers issue is a single matter still delaying the final liquidation of Tubelisha. The company cannot be liquidated until all land registered in its name is transferred. There were a total of some 700 stands originally identified. after the initial transfer, 323 problematic stands remain. 149 of these have been transferred, 37 more are ready for transfer, 102 stands in Doronkop, Gauteng, are held up pending the lifting of a moratorium on the transfer due to stands being below the flood line. 54 stands in Khayelitsha, Western Cape, are held up by the city of Cape Town, refusing to issue rates, accounts, or certificates. This is a problem. We've been visiting the city, I think, 5 times, having meetings with different officials, promising that certificates will be issued. Up to now, it seems we are chasing a moving target, because we can't get satisfaction out of this. There are 4 vacant stands in Khayelitsha, and are actually roads and need to be dealt with by the city. So in other words, what was in Tubelisha's books as vacant stands, they are now roads, and the city needs to deal with that. 12 more stands in Cape Town have to be sold and transferred. Now, this is a summary of land transfers, the title deeds. There are 110. Nothing was lodged. Receive rate certificate. We have not received anything. Awaiting rate amount to be paid. There are 54 stands in Khayelitsha. Mother deed, there are 4. Vacant land is 12, and the total is 180. Now, Tubelisha properties in Gauteng, we had 39. Awaiting rate certificate, there are 37. The land which is vacant is 24. Then we have other which is 43, and in total there are 143. So in total, the title deeds are 149. Awaiting rate certificate is 37. Awaiting rate amount to be paid is 54. Mother deed is 4, vacant land is 36, other is 43, so all in all is 323. Now, some of these pieces of land, they are in informal settlements, and it's so difficult to locate some of these land parcels which are in the, I mean some of these stands which are in the books of Tubelisha. Other matters, all assets, that is the company, furniture, computer equipment, have been distributed to schools in terms of treasury approval, to HDA and to provincial departments, especially those from the offices of Tubelisha, which were in the provinces. All contractual relationships have been terminated, with the exception of IT services, the printer rental, which will be terminated once all land is transferred. The company no longer incurs any other monthly costs to facilitate or offices and makes use of the office at the service provider at no cost. Tubelisha overpaid the pay-as-you-earn in the final month before closure in the amount of 1 million. 74,665. SARS has acknowledged this liability, but SARS being SARS, it's not willing to pay back this amount. Once it is in, it can't come out. The financial position of Tubelisha at the time of closure was precarious, with significant losses recorded and substantial liabilities anticipated. The closure process has been successfully negotiated settlements of all liabilities, and reach agreement with all provinces on the project reconciliation and the returning of remaining funds. The closure process also negotiated approval for implementer's fee and the project management fee amounting to 142 million. The result is that Tubelisha has been able to cover all its closure costs except for specific closure grant funding of 16.2 million and convert the accumulated deficit of 166 million into the accumulated surplus of 46.4 million. The financial results and the annual report have been audited on an annual basis during the closure process with no negative audit findings. Historically, the current results of Tubelisha during the closure process are set out below. Now, this is the final income statement, which at the bottom shows the accumulated surpluses over the years, which is now 46.4229 million. I'm not going. This money, if Tubelisha finally closes, will be returned to National Treasury, to the fiscus. Assets. The total assets it's 55. I think these are inventories, trade and other receivables, cash and cash equivalent. The total equity and liabilities, I'm sorry, the total current liabilities, it's 9,933,173. The total equity over liabilities is 55 million. The remaining closure matters are to finalize the transfer of land still registered in the name of Tubelisha, in other words, to clean all the books of, to empty all the books of Tubelisha. Collect overpaid pay as you earn from SARS, which I doubt we will succeed, because it is in our books. I'm not sure whether it should be written off, because it appears as an asset. Returning retained funds to KZN provincial departments, I think these were the retention funds. During the project building stage, there is this retention. Agreed on distribution of remaining funds and prepare final liquidation accounts. Submit liquidation and distribution accounts to the Master of the High Court and receive final liquidation. Distribute funds and close banks. We are hoping that if the issue of the transfer of land, we succeed with it, we will be able to close Tubelisha in the next half of the new financial year. The finalization of this process is dependent on the cooperation and assistance of the City of Cape Town, the City of Johannesburg, and the Gauteng province for the finalization of the land transfers. I think this concludes the report on Tubelisha. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Reverend Gomes. Members?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we take note of the progress report, and I think one is conscious of the fact that it might take time to close off the whole process because it has taken quite a long time. But I think to some degree one would acknowledge the effect of the legal impediments that are engulfed here in the issue of land and properties. The question I just have is in terms of these properties that has been transferred,
who takes the final responsibility for those projects and for those properties? Is it the owner themselves, or what happens? The essence of the question, of my question, will be informed by the query that I will raise over Servcon in terms of the properties. But what I just want to find in terms of these properties that you were saying that have been transferred, who takes the final liability? Is it the property owners themselves, or will there be an entity where people can go and report their grievances to after the closure of Tubelicha? I think that is very important. And all these outstanding legal challenges, who takes ownership of them after the closure of this? Do they go down into the ocean, or there is a way where it can be settled with? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I do want to thank Mr. Nkomasulu for putting a full report in front of us, finances and all. However, you know, it would seem to me, I know that legal things tend to drag on, but I would like to see a little bit of speeding up here. You've got, you know, and it's good, your 700 stands have now come down to 323, as I can see here. Now, it seems to me, for example, that these, and it's only Gauteng and the Western Cape that seem to be involved here. It doesn't seem like a huge big thing that we've got to resolve here in order to, you know, resolve these land issues. I mean, if you're talking about rate certificates and you're talking about, you know, these other things here, is that so difficult? You know, if you set your mind to actually sitting with the City of Cape Town or Gauteng or whatever to actually get these things. So that's the one thing. The other thing that disturbs me, because I don't like to see monies written off, and that is the SARS thing. How hard have you tried, you know, or who have you spoken to? Sometimes it's not, you know, it's who you know, not what you know, you know, to in order to get that million rand back. And, yeah, I think for me, Chairperson, that is, the questions that I would like to see. And then if you talk about the 6 months, please be aware that we do have to submit this legacy report. So don't think that by leaving this for the next term, these things will disappear off the agenda, because they're going to be very much there. And I think we're saying, if you're saying 6 months, I mean, sure, we're going to be following that in another 3 months' time. And then, you know, finally the 6. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Member. Oh, very much.
Thank you, Chair. I would like also to concur with my colleagues in appreciating the report, the progress report. But anyway, there are few things that a person wants to be clear about. I would like to find out about these voluntary severance packages. The staff given an option to take a package or not to take a package and stay for redeployment? Were they given an option to choose? The metro, I would like to know about the metro, because Tubelicha has never had a relationship with metro builders. Metro builders, then whom were they having a contractual relationship? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sassiro. Madam Gomez. Page, how about page 16? You are very silent. On the last one. Nandibuva, mhlamba amanye ama members ayakuva. Uma ukathethi. You are referring to the finalization of this process, which is dependent. Which is dependent on the cooperation and the presentation yako, you indicated you have got a problem, which means so they evaluate, they will, you will never reach a closure. What does that mean? That is what you are silent. What government was one doing in Nazca trying to cooperate? Is new structure trying to cooperate with new structure? What are the procedures? The ministers, the team that are responsible, national, province, and then the mayors. Kaloni na leto kutalani ped. Uchawe. I very good. Come from you. That long can be good than no pet. I'll show you me. I'll do woman of the paikoni. And the government's money was spent buying this land. Now let me say, ya lenga, it's a challenge. Yom sharp. I don't understand. You are saying you do have these land parcels or stands. Most of them are in the informal settlement areas. So it's even difficult to locate them. So what does that mean? And I still have a question. Ngomhlaba owathengwa nguThubelisha owasefishi isikona. The land was bought for human settlements development. Yaba abantu bapha efishi isikona. And it was paid for. Apparently, the city decided not to build houses for those people there. They opted for reallocation because of the environmental issues. What will happen kula mali ethengela mhlaba? Umhlaba bese uthengele ukwakha izindlu, asisazakhi izindlu. Ngoba lokhu ithi environment asinakwakha apha. Sifuna la mali ke ibuye back siyothenga ntoni umhlaba for ukwakhela abantu izindlu kule ndawo. So ndizama ukubeka nje i-example eclear ebona na ngoba nithathatha ukuthi we buy land niyayeka ninazinto ezincibilike zihambe nomsinga. Ebona into endiyitshode kumngomezo. So that is why ndithandithi. I think that's in your head. And maybe other honorable members, they are able to get your story. Now I don't get it, unfortunately. Then you, there's quite a lot of a list of outstanding matters. 2, 4, 6. I'm not 6, but when you get in, you expand. You might find that it's a lot, let alone the SARS issue. The KZN issue, you are left with to return the remaining funds to them. We don't know what is that, how much, for what. Then the issue of the race certificate. Cooperative governance. What does it mean? How do we implement it? The very woman is here and I go by all the 30 plus cases and too many. Hi, my daughter. Hi, my. John was sent to Nineveh and then decided to. So it just looked like that. It was. Foot and Munovia has one and then to go well while I like, oh, I'm going to sit off Cape Town. Okay. Every certificate. So I'm trying to say, really, to me, it does not make sense. I don't understand what. And there is land that is on the flat line, and mina niti ngumno mweni anyazi ukuthi nizokuthini lo mhlaba andithi umhlaba uthengiwe kuthubelisha then ubhataliwe so la mali mayihambe nke nomsinga. Then the last one on the issue of the settlements, negotiated settlements. They were negotiated settlements. We want those agreements, settlements. One them. All of them. We are agreeing to this one. Here is the document. They turn around. Submit a claim. We must be able to respond to that. So, and it's assisting because as it was agreements, settlement agreements, you are signed with them. And now they are bringing petitions to Parliament.
So you're not assisting us. Thank you. Chair? Okay. Chairperson, thank you very much for the valuable questions. And I think some are somehow impactful for us, especially on the issue of the documentation. And I think, Chairperson, your last comment, I'll tie it back to Mr. Mohalapa's comment on the claim backs. Chair, the issue of settlements, I think the chairperson is very fair because obviously when queries come, they come to Parliament now because of people knowing very well that Tubelisha is not there and because of the constituencies of which we do respect and we take it with great concern. Chair, we'll gladly provide the breakdown and the provisions of all the documentations in a spreadsheet rather than in a form of papers because these are big documents. While we would...
So, Funaje, Aponeja is settlement where they have signed. No. As a funny spreadsheet, I don't think it's proper to get a spreadsheet. We want where they have signed. Where they have signed that they are agreeing with the settlement. Because the spreadsheet, our purposes of verify each department or whoever has agreed with Metro Builders or VFN that we are settling. That's the problem. Where the settlement. Because you can't just need to settle and fag mali a bantwin and then a go quap above corner and then you sign.
Chairperson, the reason why I'm talking about the spreadsheet is for us to explain
with the supporting document, and I did indicate that the supporting documents are there. The reason why I'm saying the spreadsheet, we will indicate to say, number one, this is the situation. The attachment is Annexure A. So that information will be provided to the chairperson, all the documentation with parties and their signatories to it will be provided. The issue of the spreadsheet is just for the members to actually get a clear picture of what is the first annexure talking to. That information will be provided, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think going back to Ntate Mokgala, but the reason why we came up with the process of negotiation and the process of us not having loopholes in the process, it's the fact that we do not want any comebacks. And I think the ownership as the very same documentation that we shall prepare and the attachment to it will be objectively provided for everyone to be able to see that as we do the transfers, both parties have agreed to such transfers. And there won't be any qualifications or rather any other loopholes that would be represented to that. And the idea of us when we came back to this is of who will take the final ownership. As we transfer the document, the clause is very clear to say the agreement that we have suggests that the land that is being transferred is transferred fully to the owner of the person who takes the land, and the ownership rights are transferred to the particular person who takes. And that information also would be provided similarly with the information the chair that is properties, that is, and the property at the end of the day will be undertaken by the seller with the seller rights and the ownership rights. The issue of SARS, and I will leave the rest to Ngomizulu from the technical part. The issue of SARS, and I think we do agree to say that we are hesitant, Chairperson, to write off the debt. I must indicate that we have actually taken this to the highest level for even us providing a written document to the commissioner of SARS. The last of this engagement was that because of the reconciliations that were done in the past, we could not actually have an engagement with SARS personally at the level of the commissioner. We were always giving the levels of the administrators. But the fact that we realized that we are not actually winning with the case, we gave it back to the former minister, Tokyo, and I remember very well, we prepared a document for him to sign to the commissioner to indicate the fact that while Tweedisha has money in their books, but the 1.4 million or the 1.2 million then of SARS still needs to come back to the books of so that we clear the SARS debt in our books and while they are sitting with credit. At some point, they did acknowledge that they would transfer the money, but they are taking time to transfer that money to us. But we are not in a position to write off the debt because it's SARS. We are still waiting, and I'm not even certain at this point in time if the commissioner has actually responded to our request signed by the Minister of Human Settlements then. And I think, Chairperson, as we shall come back to
follow up, on the question of SARS, you say that there was they've acknowledged. Has that been acknowledged in writing?
Definitely. It has been acknowledged in writing. We do have every documentation to every engagement that we have with SARS.
Well, that should be fairly simple then to actually get that claim back.
We agree. We agree, Chairperson. We'll provide that information, yeah. Chairperson, I think the let me just check the other one in terms of the transfer funds to KZN. Chairperson, I think this was based on the legal matter that was between us and the issue of the Stimela. The why we retained the funds, and I'll come back to the issue of the Metro Builders. The reason why we retained the fund of KZN is the fact that we still had a claim from Stimela that was not certain, was not clear as to whether it will be settled, and for the issue of the profits or the losses that they may have incurred with their defendants in the case. But we have a a positive balance of the money that should be transferred to KZN, and KZN would use it for the human settlement development just like we did with the other claims that we have. So that money could be retained or should be returned back to KZN, and I think it's at the value of 86 million at the time of us having the engagement. So Metro Builders,
what we did with Metro Builders, Metro Builders came to Elisha as well, or rather to the National Department of Human Settlements at that time. And when we took over, the investigation that we did, or rather we did so much investigation to a point that we realized that Tuvelisha did not have any contract with Metro Builders. Instead, it had it was subcontract to Veren. And because we had some settlements, of which we will also provide again to the chair based on the spreadsheet, there was a settlement that we did with Eastern Cape in particular. We paid an amount of 89 million to Eastern Cape. And when we paid that amount, it was paid with conditions to say that as far as any contractors who are still continuing with the work that the Tuvelisha had at that point in time, because when we talked Chetty 600, and I think at that point in time we were also talking the Veren because of the other contract, we gave the money to Eastern Cape, and the condition that was set to the money as we transferred it. And at that time, the current project manager, the CFO then, agreed to the terms and conditions of us setting to say, as per all the contractors as they would finish, and all the queries that would be related to the contracted Veren and Chetty 600 will be addressed by the Eastern Cape province. And Eastern Cape agreed to that terms and conditions as they accepted the money. So while we will be coming back, Chairperson, and with the request made by the chair this Friday on the acknowledgement of the Eastern Cape, the National Department, and probably Tuvelisha at that point in time, we will have a full report to that effect and how Metro Builders would be assisted in the process, because the idea is to assist Metro Builders, because Metro Builders has done the job. Whether he was subcontracted, it's something else, but at the end of the day, he did the job and he needs to be paid. So we want to determine that who is going to take the responsibility of ensuring that Metro Builders is actually giving a fair chance of getting its payment. Chairperson, I'll leave the rest to Mbomezi for the technical ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first start with the questions raised by Honorable Mukalapa. You wanted to know with regards to the transfer of property, the final responsibility. Now, properties can be divided into two. There are properties, stands, who are having their rightful owners, who are already having four rooms living in those RDP houses which were built by Tuvelisha. Now, they transfer, some of those properties were still in Tuvelisha's name. Yeah. So it was a question of registering title deeds and transferring those properties. But there are properties which are vacant. There are vacant stands which we have donated back to local authorities for the building of new homes there, because Tuvelisha is no longer involved in that. The other question is the issue of ownership of legal matters after Tuvelisha has been closed. Now, there is no question of closing Tuvelisha if there are still pending legal issues. We anticipate by the time we go to the Master of the Supreme Court, there won't be any outstanding legal matters. There will not be outstanding liability. There will be no outstanding assets which are still in the books of Tuvelisha. So I don't anticipate pending legal matters when Tuvelisha is finally liquidated. The release of race certificate, it's a problem, Slalo. We've been camping in those offices. we have a permanent person who is almost flying now and then to Cape Town, camping in those offices. We had meetings. Our CFO had meetings at a big senior level, and we have been always getting promises that this would be fixed. perhaps we have to look at other IGR processes which may assist us in releasing these rate certificates, because without rate certificate, we can't transfer property. We can't approach the DIS office, because there must be rate clearance certificates before we can approach. So that's the problem. It's a catch-22 situation where we want to release title deeds, but title deeds are now held up by rate certificates. We will try another method in order to... We are thinking, Chair. We are camping there. We are having meetings. Man Mahlatsi, what else can we do after all these meetings?
Chair, I think perhaps he also forgets, and I should have actually indicated that there was a letter that was also addressed to the mayor himself. By Mr. Sekwale. I took the responsibility of writing letters to the mayor and to the commissioner, and both letters, I think we will provide that supporting document, because we felt at that time that we've actually reached a stone which we cannot even actually hit very hard to that.
Hello. But you are, it's called a story, but what was... Lakufele koni tolo, okay, kulungile.
Yes, that is going to be a follow-up, or you might have said it, but I've got to say it, but I don't understand what just happened there. But, you know, in the IGR process, that part I did understand, is it not possible to bring in the MEC of the province, you know, to get him to crack the whip here with the mayor or whoever to get those things? I think there must be a will here, you know, on your part to say we're going to get, and if he doesn't do it, go to the Premier.
What I want to know, what are the other processes that are there for them? The IGR processes. Because and then said, we want to know why the status is in Gaga. After Honorable Sekwale wrote a letter to the mayor and there was no response, that was the end of part one. When was that? Almost a year, neighbor. So that is why in Nanzoshayan in a because Nini and Gababon would be serious. And don't want to fly every day doesn't mean anything to us. Flying or not every day or extending in a malanga. Flying to the waterfront means nothing to us. So what we are saying. From you would know this matter is a case. So you have to give yourself a time frame to say, oh, Minister, Ura, Oipali letter to me. And I believe that at least there should have been time frames, timelines along that from the response. If there is nothing, I think something we should have gone to the Premier even now. So same thing applies to Gauteng, because it's not Western Cape only. We do have that problem in Gauteng. So I don't know. Into hani lani tagi lani niku kulu mende nong kum seven zwenu mnye. We have got one mandate. Ingi mandate yen. Niluanga tam. Elinge ilo lenu po. El tam wa ilo lenu. Ni akoto sana ngalo. Umshaba utengiwe. Kemalaga kulu mende. Internet mo release umhlaba ukukhutshwa certificate rates babantu uba ngaba abantu abakweleti ke mawungathi ukuthi abantu bakweleti bangakweleti rates if abakhanga bakwazi ukwenza I calculations zabo proper calculations bayingabi yo burden
kwesinye istructure loo nto leyo babakhuphe ukuthi hayi akho zirates ezowayo bakhuphe izertificates that's it so nyhani kanti ke nibe serious ngalo mba but ke we really appeal ukuthi kanti ke nize nezizathu into ezilete ezibhaliweyo so that sizokwazi ukuthi but niyasokolisa aningenenza umsebenzi wenu but ileta mazisa asuzuyenza yenzani umsebenzi wenu sizawucela inatika i-portfolio committee elandelayo ukuthi iyithathe apha kodwa nina sifuna nenza umsebenzi wenu sifuna ileta eyapho kukupremier yarequesta le nto from uminista siyibone kule veki zayo ndiyayikhatha ngoku andihambi kakhulu mnayo ndibe ndigwegoleza ndiyanqo apho ufela ithole tata umgumizulu apho ufela ithole
Chair, let me proceed with other questions. We note that, Chair, that you need a copy of the letter to the Premier with regards to this issue coming from the Minister. On the issue, Yaga Honourable Umam Chabu, voluntary severance packages. Umthetho in terms of Section 189 of the Labour Relations Act, uthi if imeko yakho iyashintsha emsebenzini, your conditions change, then you have to be given an option of either accepting voluntarily severance package. Or be given a choice, you can occupy a new post with new conditions. So because Itubelisha was closing... Because Itubelisha is closing, it means the conditions of employment of Itubelisha's employees was changing, so we had to apply Section 189 and give them a choice of either taking severance package or agreeing to be redeployed from Johannesburg to Pretoria to a new department, to a new workstation where they will now incur our traveling expenses if they opt to go to Pretoria. So we did give them Ilento Leo option of choosing whether they want to opt out or they want to remain employed but being transferred to Pretoria. I think that maybe answers the question, Yako. I want to address the issue of land which has been declared unsuitable, which has been bought by Itubelisha and only to discover later on which the land has become unsuitable for building of homes. Now, such land, because Itubelisha is no longer in a position to do its business, it was donated back to the local authorities. I'm not sure in particular of the Ifishi's Corner. I don't have currently right now information about that, but I will check on that. But I know Guti. Most of the property which would no longer be utilized for building, it will be given back to it will be given to the city or to the local authority to do other things because it's government money, and if we donate it back to the city, it's still government.
Just to do anything. Because land slab yabona ndizawubambelela kwasefishi zikhona enye iminye nanzenamsebenzi nayo i-resolution yayo iyawusiza ileya yasefishi zikhona honorable members. Land was bought i-Nelson Mandela ukuthi kwakhelwe abantu ababe evictiwe from i-farm bafike basetlisha kule ndawo then uThubelisha bought that land kuba kwakhelwe aba bantu kuba bakwi-cemetery area so kune-problem kuthiwa ke nomhlaba. So i-records of decision the first one yathi makwakhiwe but i-department iqinisekise ukuthi i-infrastructure qala before yakhe bulk infrastructure should be addressed sinayo lokuphi nalo record of decision jibilili uzofuna wakhelwa abantu wavela ezinye futhi i-record of decision ezithi hayi sekune-species ba ezinzi dangerous awunawakhiwa and we asked a question ukuthi aningasiniki i-consultant you owe us. We took a decision, Honorable Mkhalapa, to say they must provide us with the name of that consultant so that since the research ukuthi ayinazi relationship nabani nabani, the interest of NASIC. It's 2 years now. Asikayitholi. At every time, but I don't know what now you are telling us what you need to take with city, and it's what you need to take with city directly. So I need to donate to the Mshabangoba. As I said, I need to donate without conditions, terms of course. Because I'm not no more than that. If we find out what you need to do, we need to find out what the fish is gone. Bafaka something pa ebu business okanye bawuthengisa la mhlaba bamnika some boot wakwazi yena ukuhlala pa nobuhleli kanjani. Are you going to say if you don't have terms and conditions and the donation yaz bayamba akukho to donate anje mahala niyazazi indaba ze donors there are conditions that are set nithi noma sivumele nene you just donated the land. No. They can do anything.
Thank you, Manager. Just to remind Babu Mgumi Mubanga, but the land we're talking about is 2.5 kilometers from Alcen Alban service where the buildings. That's why the chair is saying if you want to give them just they can do anything. But we know exactly why there was this EIM which was there, all of a sudden, because that land they think that is for the whites only that area. The blacks come the properties there. It's only because they will degrade their properties. If now you are going to say to us, we just gave them, they can do whatever they want to do. Whereas initially it was meant for the houses there. So anything that is now can get them and can do whatever. It's only because we are there. It's not now. We are there to 2009. That piece of land was bought 1998. The people were there from 1998. Now we were there 2009, and then we went back again. And now, when you come back, Baba Mkame Ngumi, do us a favor, please, and give us a proper report. Now, this one is vague, to be honest to you.
Chair, let me acknowledge what we know nothing about Fishes Corner. That's number one. It may be one of the properties which were transferred, but maybe IB is why Fishes Corner in the books of Tubelisha.
Because when we started the process of dismantling Ithubelisha, we had to go to their asset register and look at what is there, what is stated. And we had to decide on two ways of disposing, because Ithubelisha was no longer building. It was no longer operative. Where there were properties which were given to beneficiaries, we needed to transfer those properties to beneficiaries by registering amatitled deeds. Where properties were vacant, and because Ithubelisha, in fact, some of the properties were given to EHDA, and some of the properties were given to the cities, allow us to go and investigate. We are just going to investigate our land parcels around Nelson Mandela, which we were in the books of Ithubelisha. If Ithubelisha's corner is there, we will be able to report back to what happened. How did we dispose of that Ithubelisha's corner? But if it's not there, we'll come back and say it was not part of Ithubelisha's, it's not in the records of Ithubelisha. If it's not in the record and the management of Ithubelisha resigned, it's difficult for us to retrace which, what was there, what was not there. Tina, we were working on the asset register.
Bayaphila. They can come and account. Because what we are saying, that land was bought in that report is on record. The land was bought by Ithubelisha 20 years now back. Yeah, so the necessity sifuna a full report wathengwa umhlaba wakhona kwathi ngona record of decision. Yafika nini record of kwakuthenze ngakhiwa before the record of decision. Umhlaba wawuthengi. And then uphiye ngokumhlaba. Nilande nize nayo. Nide nizoyiphetha. Ningayikhi phakathi. Nilande. Somebody must come and account about that land. Ukuphi. Uba ukho ezincwadini zaThubelisha, kufuneka sokwazi uba uphume nini, waya kwezigabani. Masivale. Singene ku...
I would like to know ukuthi, what did the department think of the transport for these people who were going to be redeployed from Joburg to Pretoria? Because now I'm thinking of money. I'm thinking if I'm from Durban to Maritzburg, it's a lot of money. What did you do with it?
Honorable Mamjabu, the state doesn't subsidize the transport of an employee. That is why you are given a choice. You are either going to accept the package as it is, or you opt out of the system. Bakhona ba opted out because they felt Pretoria is good than Johannesburg. But as a rule, the state cannot subsidize me in Sugar Boxburg near Pretoria. Injalonji. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Martin is coming. What's that called? This is a breaker. Then get started with HDA.
Can I start? Well, Ithubelisha is a baby, Yaga Sevcon, because those are twins. Ithubelisha came because of Sevcon.
ISEFCON, its mandate, because it expired and it was supposed to close, then Itubelisha automatically had to be closed at the same time. Now, the presentation army is having a little background. What happened to the staff, cash flow challenges, sale of land and assets, and a conclusion. As a part of the background, SEFCON was established as a joint venture between government and the banks. Both parties held equal shareholding, and the mandate period of the entity was set for 8 years, from 1998 up to 2006. In 2006, the company became wholly owned by government as the banks resolved to exit the arrangements. The last Minister of Housing, Honorable Lindiwe Sisulu, resolved to close SEFCON as part of regionalization of public entities. The minister approved the implementation of the closure plan in February 2009. In November 2012, Ms. F. Mahlase was appointed as a managing director, an interim managing director, to finalize the closure of this entity, just as it was the case with Itubelisha. Currently, there are no permanent members, staff members remaining. SEFCON employs 4 staff members on a month-to-month contract until the closure is finalized. The staff members which are still employed is the chief financial officer, the manager of the original mandate, who's dealing with right sizing, who's still finalizing the right sizing even up to now, and the IT administrator and the accountant. SEFCON discontinued all new business operations following the approval of the closure plan in 2009. SEFCON has prioritized the collection of outstanding revenue and settlement of outstanding debts and liabilities since 2009. SEFCON only have currently is now remaining with portions of land and landed properties that can be sold to generate the cash to settle outstanding liabilities. The most significant remaining debt is the tax liability of 13.4 million as at April 2013. We can't close ISEFCON until we are able to pay this tax debt. One may ask, Uti, can't we offset because ISARS is owing us on Itubelisha? And we cannot, because these are two separate entities, and in terms of the law, they are separate entities. We cannot do that. The running costs consist of salaries of staff who are still remaining and other administration costs such as external audit fees, because we still have to audit their books even though they are not operating. We need to table their annual reports to Parliament even though they are not operating, until such time they are closed. Payroll administration and printing costs. The department paid 1.5 million during 2013-14 financial year on behalf of SEFCON for audit fees, payroll fees, salaries of the remaining staff. In fact, this figure is a combination of all those things. SEFCON concluded a sale agreement on the 26th of February 2013 with the Housing Development Agency for the sale of of 5 properties for 27.7 million. The properties are as follows: Earth 2263 and 126 at Queenstown for 3 million. Portion of 238 of 78 Farm, E.R. De Beers, for 9.8 million. The farm in Elofs Park in Swane for 7.1 million. And also Earth 10501 509 Philippe for 2.2 million. Then the Rams Farms for 5 million. All in all, it is 27.6 million. The transfer of Earth 2663 and 1826 in Queenstown, the portion 238 of 78 Farm, and also the Earth 10509 in Philippe was finalized in August. An amount of 9 million was transferred to South African Revenue on the 8th of August, and a further amount of 3 million was transferred on the 20th of August. The tax liability was reduced to 1.6 million now as at 1st September 2013 as a result. The transfer documents for the transfers of Elofs Park number 77 was lodged with Deeds Office on the 5th of August 2013. The Deeds Office rejected the transfer, citing outstanding approval from the Department of Agriculture and the Municipal Consent. The transfer documents were lodged again with the Deeds Office on the 12th of December. The transfer again was again rejected. The transferring attorney is currently discussing the matter with the examiners and the registrar of Deeds Office. An error with the recorded extent of Michael Haynes' property was detected by the Deeds Office. The matter is being investigated by the Deeds Office and the Surveyor General. The tax liability is an interest bearing. The tax liability is 2.2 now as at January 2014. Servcon will be in a position to settle outstanding tax liability once the transfer of properties is finalized. Once the tax liability and the other outstanding operating expenditure of Servcon is settled, the entity will be in a position to submit an application to the Master of the High Court for the appointment of the liquidator to liquidate the Servcon through voluntary liquidation. However, I must also indicate, Guti, there are other land parcels which Servcon is still possessing, which we intend to transfer to HCA once all tax liabilities have been settled. I think this is just a brief report. Let me just also indicate all liabilities and creditors have been paid up to now. The only creditor which is remaining is SARS. Once SARS is paid, then it's all system goes.
Thanks, Chair. I think it's a similar question, more in line with Chubelicha in terms of responsibility for properties. Explain again in terms of properties that were built under Servcon. Those two different ones, the RDP ones and the private houses one. What will be the responsibility going forward? Because I've got an area in my constituency called Block FF and GG. They were built by Servcon, those houses. And they are very much in appalling conditions. They even don't have toilets inside. I don't know what Servcon was thinking when they were building those houses. So what is the status? What happens in that case? Where do people go in that instance? Because Servcon is finally going to be closed down. So who takes responsibility and liability in that instance? And let me find out, what was the reason that the banks withdrew? Because part of the problem is that one. Most of the people took bonds with the banks, and then when they go to the bank says, no, sorry, we can't help you. It was Servcon. So they are in a question-in-two situation. They can't go to the bank. They can't go to the department because they're saying, no, it was Servcon. So where do people go in that instance? Because the banks are shutting the door. And what was the reasons for the banks to withdraw? And again, in terms of the legal liabilities, who will be responsible for those? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding now is that the debt outstanding with SARS is what now is holding up the closure. Of Servcon. Now, what I'm also understanding, you originally as at April 2013, there was 13.4 million there outstanding, but then you've come to sell land, and that now is going to pay for that outstanding tax, right? So, in fact, with the last two properties that you will sell, one in Gauteng and the one in the Western Cape, 75, giving you another 12 million rand. I think I'm correct. So you will actually come out of this with a surplus, even although you now, that's increased to 2 million, the tax you're now going to have. Can I just ask you, where are you at with the completion of those two? Because then if you are able to give us that, you can tell us exactly when the Servcon is going to close down. Are there problems in selling those last two, or are there not? Is that a plain, straightforward, where are you, what is the status of the sale of that?
Chair, thank you. Honourable Mkalapa, I cannot answer this question without giving you the background. Why Servcon and Thubelisha were established? Because pre-94 there were rent and bond boycotts. Now, in order to stabilise the housing market, the then Minister, Honourable Minister, the late Joe Slovo, entered into a social contract with all players in the housing value chain. You remember the Buchabelo Accord. From the Buchabelo Accord, there was a record of understanding. Now, this record of understanding was signed between the banks and the minister at that time with regards to the issue of banks stopping to redline certain areas and resuming lending in black townships. But there was a problem of properties which were non-performing. Which were identified at that time. Then there was the issue of right sizing. Now, right sizing was a process where a person is unable to pay his bond, he will be given an RDP house. He should vacate out of the bond, out of the bonded property, and the bonded property would be given back to the bank, and that family would be now be housed into an RTP house. So that was the process. The process was so slow that MINMEC in 2006 took a resolution
that there should be an in-situ right-sizing. Now, in-situ right-sizing, you are not removing those people, but you are paying the banks amount which is equal to the value of the RDP, and allowing those people to remain staying in those bonded houses. Now, to Belisha,
who takes over the remainder of the bond amount?
Well, there was an agreement between the banks and the department that because the loans were how do I put it? I want to put it this way. There was an agreement that the banks are going to take, you know, a shortfall and accept the amount which they would have been paid if it was an RDP house. So they accepted this thing, the subsidy amount, in exchange for them giving over their claim to the bonded houses. That was the right sizing. Now, to Belisha was the other arm of Servcon, which was building, actually.
Yeah.
Servcon was entering into agreements with people. To Belisha was building. Now, you ask me, who's going to take responsibility of shoddy work,
yeah,
which happened by then?
Yeah.
The question is, was NHBRC involved at that time? Because if there was no insurance, if there was no warranty, then it becomes difficult to say who's going to foot the bill in this case. Those people went there in agreeing to be right-sized, and at that time, I'm not sure whether was the property in a bad state when they went in, or is it because of wear and tear, or is it because of lack of maintenance? It's so difficult for me to say who has to take responsibility at that time.
What I can tell you, it was during that time, because of most of those houses, when they were built, the fact that NHBRC was not there, and the way the deal was crafted between Servcon and the banks and the people, I think the people got a raw deal there. That is the problem.
Okay. All right. The other issue, you speak of legal responsibility. As I've indicated, we can't close any entity when there are outstanding legal issues. We need to deal with those issues before we can approach the master of the Supreme Court. So there won't be any outstanding legal issues by the time we approach the master of the Supreme Court. Honorable Bowman, you spoke of the surplus. Can you just remind me? Yes. We have discovered that there are technicalities which makes the deeds office to reject these properties which are being lodged for transfer. Now, we are dealing with that currently. Our attorney, transferring attorney, is dealing with those issues. And because the tax liability is increasing because of interest, we are hoping, in fact, we are working to see those properties lodge again with the deeds, so that we are able to pay off the tax, and perhaps we can close the entity by the 31st of March. Perhaps we can. Why? Because we are lodging again next week. We are lodging again next week.
Yeah,
Is it, you know, when you say that, have you now overcome the problems that were presented on, you know, on these? Have you now dealt with that, and you are now sure that in lodging this, you're going to be able to sell them properties on the 31st of March?
If the goalposts are not shifted, if the goalposts are still where they are, if the goalposts are where they are, then we will be in a position to do that. What I mean, Honourable Bowman, is we have identified the problem areas, number one, and we have worked on the problem areas. We are lodging again with the deeds office next week, and if there are no other difficulties, then we are going to pay SARS and begin. No, in fact, I overstated when I say we will be closing. We will be going for liquidation. In other words, we will be approaching the master of the Supreme Court, maybe before the 31st of March.
The last comment is quite okay, because he's saying maybe by the 31st of March, so it's okay. But that question was saying they also indicated there will be a surplus. But I thought maybe she wanted to understand what happens. Probably it will be transferred.
Chair, the surplus belongs to the fiscus. If there is a surplus, we close the entity, we take it back to the fiscus in terms of the PFMA and Treasury regulations. The issue of land, as I indicated, we are hoping that once we have removed the hurdle of the tax, then we can be able to transfer the land to the HDA.
Members, this brings us to the end, but I think the issue of the text, you must consider it very seriously. Yabona uSelcon, if unenye umhlaba makawuthengise uAC yathenga umhlaba bamba bobhatala. Yabona apha mina ngokunokwami it is my own view. There are two things here. The tax is escalating. On the other side, you continue paying salary. If you are me, and the pretty up, me feel vanity. We'll keep on it dead in appealing up. Napa, you spend. Man, you negotiate with HD by committing a deal and can answer the subcon, anything for the other properties. HD, I take property. Go patala. It ends. Thank you. Take a break for 25 to coming back. Comfort break. Thank you.